And so the sailors understood this. And so this is the wrath of God expressed in the physical realm. Now, there's no evidence in this book here that the sailors actually grasped that Jonah's God was the God. We don't want to read into this what's not there. They were amazed and they were fearful that Jonah's God was able to do this, especially out at sea. And he told them, my God is the God. But there's nothing in the context to say that they grasped that and they bowed down and worshiped him as the God and gave up their own gods. It's just not in the context here. So we don't want to read into it what's not there. But the fact that Jonah did this to the true God makes his decision even more fearful than they realize. Because remember, they don't have a good grasp of God as the God. Not just powerful, but master and creator of all creation. So how do you appease God? That would be their next question. How do you appease God? How do you calm his wrath so you can live? If you go back and you read the mythologies, the Greco-Roman mythologies, it was all about appeasing God so you could get on their good side. That's how they were thought in those days. And since it was Jonah's God, the sailors then asked Jonah, how do you fix this? Reasonable question, they wouldn't know. How do you fix this? So that we can survive. And Jonah tells them, throw me in the sea. And they're going, whoa. That's pretty drastic. Because I'm telling you, throw a man overboard in stormy seas, he will drown. Jonah picks his own fate again. Remember, the seas are the picture of demonic forces at work. Did God cause the storm or did God allow the storm? I talked about that in the last lesson three on this. Go back and listen to that to gain an appreciation of that statement. But Jonah picks the forces of Lucifer over obedience to God. Throw me into the sea. Sacrifice me. He chose to sacrifice himself to the demonic forces in order to save the sailors, knowing that God was going to save him. Now this is the image of Christ. This is the sign that Christ talked about. Not just 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish. All of this goes into why that happened. Jonah knows, you throw me in the sea, I'm going to die. And the waters will come and you'll be saved. But Jonah knows that God is God, and if it's God's will, he will be saved also. Was that not the mindset of Christ, who willingly offered himself up, paid the penalty for sin, knowing that God would raise him up again? And now it's the sailors' turn to disobey God. They know what God wants. Jonah has just told them. He explained who God is. He explained how to survive all this. And they ignored it. And they tried to row to land. Now, obviously, they tried this before and it didn't work. But this shows several things. That they did not understand Jonah's God as God. And they were not willing to abandon Jonah to his death. Not willingly. And we tend to think of pagan man, ancient man, as being very bloodthirsty, very cruel, very so on and so forth. Well, because we don't understand their worldview. And these were relatively reasonable people. Now you get another more isolated, much more paganistic societies, such as over in the South Pacific region, Africa, South America, and yes, they were very brutal. But are we not any less brutal ourselves? When we send a drone down to wipe out 50 people because there's two in the midst that we want to eliminate? And so here they are trying to row. They have no sun, they have no moon, they have no stars. They don't have the modern accoutrements of a compass. They don't have maps. All they have is their head. How do they pick which direction to go? In fact, the sails in those days were so rudimentary they could not tack against the wind. They basically take down the sail and they try to row. I don't know if you've ever seen storms. Most of us haven't out on the ocean. But you get a modern passenger cruise ship in the midst of a storm. And you see these things. And you see the furniture going from one end to the other end. Going down. Imagine the forces at work. This little boat is not even close to that size. And they had to wrap ropes and chains around it to keep it from disintegrating anyway under a storm. And they've already thrown out their cargo. Where do they think they're going? You have 8 men, 12 men, 20 men rowing against what? They're going wherever the storm takes them. They're not doing anything. It's just dead works. So knowing the will of God and rejecting it, they are now as guilty of disobedience as Jonah is. Thus, they get to share his fate. Death. Because remember James 4:17, those who know to do good and do it, not do it, it is sin. So they would not willingly abandon him. Remember, Peter did the same thing with Christ. When Christ said, I must go to Jerusalem and die, Peter said, no, you're God, you don't have to die. I don't even understand what you're saying there. And Christ had to tell him, get behind me, Satan. Well, that's what they're doing. They're literally disobeying God, acting the role of Satan. Trying to be compassionate, but it's not the right kind of compassion. And they realize it's not going to work, so they abandon Jonah to God. Faced with the choice of life or death, obedience or disobedience, the sailors chose life. Wise move. Now remember, they just didn't pick Jonah and throw him over the side. They picked Jonah, they talked to him, they ascertained the facts. They tested the facts by trying to row. Not working. They're left with one. They have options. They may not like their options, but you always have options. They keep Jonah in the boat and they can all die. Or they can throw Jonah out of the boat and he'll probably live. Remember, they don't know that. So they throw Jonah out of the boat. With a prayer, do not hold us guilty for this man's blood, so on and so forth. And then they all go and make vows to offer sacrifices to the gods, so on and so forth. Well, where are they going to do that at? Because they don't know anything about Jonah's God, or the temple, or Jerusalem. And they're going to Tarshish, or wherever it is they think they're going to go after they don't have any cargo now. And so they didn't have Jonah's God drowning them for throwing his prophet into the seas and drowning him, thus transferring God's wrath from Jonah onto them. But sailors are left with little position. You know something? That's why tribulation comes in our lives, because that seems to be the only thing we understand. It's tribulation. We misinterpret the good times. Remember, Lucifer can make the times good to lull you into sin. And God has to bring the parisma, the testings on us, to make us realize how weak we are and how much we need Him. Thus the sailors obeyed Jonah, and thus God, when they threw Jonah into the raging seas, and almost immediately the storm abates. When I say almost immediately, it's not like next Jonah hits the water and the storm stops. But Jonah goes in the water, drowns. And very swiftly, over a period of hours, the storm is gone. Like the passing of a hurricane. And it confirms they chose wisely, obeying God. This sacrifice of Jonah to save themselves was not made rashly, nor was it really their decision. God had already made that decision, had communicated it through Jonah. They just had to obey it. It's interesting that Jonah chose to save the sailors by sacrificing his own life, but he would not go and preach a salvation message to save the Assyrians in Nineveh. So why save the sailors? Well, it was personal. He was in the boat. He saw them. He saw their fear. He saw their efforts. He could identify with them. He saw them look, searching for truth and their attempts to save him. Their deaths would be the result of his disobedience. Whereas the Assyrians were impersonal. He didn't know them. He didn't go there. They were viewed as the enemy, so you didn't have contact with them. You kept them at a distance. You didn't care what happened to them because they were brutal. They were terrible. Everyone agreed that they were brutal and terrible. So whatever they got, they deserved. That's short-sighted, though, because destroying a city would not destroy Assyria. It would not save Israel. Nineveh was not the capital. That's not going to happen for 50 years or more. That comes after Jonah. So God appoints the fish for Jonah. This does not mean that God created a fish on the spot specifically to swallow Jonah. What it does mean that God is sovereign over nature. Obviously, since He created nature. The fish was already there. The fish does what a fish does. Jonah goes in the water, he drowns, he's lifeless. Almost all animals are scavengers. Takes energy to hunt. No one's passing up a free meal. Free meal, not moving, not fighting, not going to hurt me. But it's God's will that fish be there, that fish do that. So the fish is acting consistent with its nature. Yet its natural inclination is according to God's will for Jonah's good. Now, notice this interaction again. Modern man refutes that interaction. Ancient man, if they were sitting here, they would completely understand this. And they would be amazed at our ignorance. Just like we stand here in superiority, amazed that they were that ignorant. When in actual fact, we're all ignorant when it comes to the things of God and God's working within this creation. Now, the type of fish is not relevant. Whale, fish, shark, who knows, who cares. Except that as it does God's will to transport Jonah back to his land for his mission. It may even have been one of the antediluvian creatures of the sea, because remember, they didn't all die. You live in the sea, you're not drowning in it. So they died off over time as the temperature changed and as the other fish grew in population, sharks, they hunt in packs. There's fewer and fewer of you. Because remember, you're used to living over a long span of time, which means you're probably not reproducing nearly as quickly as those creatures that live in a shorter span of time. and the merger of natural and supernatural forces harmoniously at work in these events. We see this here. So Jonah dies. I realize most people are not taught it this way, because we run into some problems if Jonah's alive. How does he breathe? Well, the fish has an air bladder. Yeah, but it's not connected to the digestive system. How does Jonah breathe? Well, he's a whale. He gulps water. Once again, their lungs are not connected to the digestive system like ours are. It's totally separate and distinct. He's not going to breathe. He's going to die. If he is alive, he's going to be struggling, which means he's going to be drowning in digestive juices. They're going to digest him on the inside. It's going to be much faster than on the outside through the protective layer of the skin. I believe, makes much more sense that Jonah dies. He doesn't require oxygen. He's not going to be taking in these digestive juices and stuff. He's there for 3 days. Fish spits him out inside. From the fish's perspective, this thing's undigestible. Blah. And that's more common than we probably realize, you know, in nature. And God brings him back to life. Now, he did that to Lazarus. He did it several times in the Old Testament. Lazarus was in the grave several days. And everyone knew that he was going to be putrefying, decaying. Yet, God raised him up and fixed it. So, why couldn't God do that here? It's that I believe that God didn't fix him completely on the outside for a reason. And we'll talk about that when we get to that in the text. So God is able to raise him from the dead, reversing the effects of death and corrosion according to his will. Remember, death is only the cessation of the body. It's not the cessation of the soul. The soul never ceases to exist or be self-aware. We turn to Christ talking about the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man opened up his eyes in hell. He was self-aware. His body was not. The body ceased to exist. You separate the soul from the body ceases to exist. The soul continues to be self-aware. There's no soul sleep. The spirit goes where it's destined. And I wrote this name of the god, Nabu, whose temple it was at Nineveh for a reason. Go back to the last lesson to read about Nabu and to why that's here. Because he wrote down the destiny of people according to the will of the gods. So, you go to paradise or do you go Sheol, which is Hebrew for their understanding of hell, rudimentary. The spirit remains self-aware of its surroundings. The body returns to physical creation. Dust to dust. Thus Jonah prays to God after death in expectation of his mercy and resurrection of Christ. Remember, the soul can do this. Which means that he did not go to a permanent place. Now we do not know, and the Bible does not tell us, where the souls of those go who are going to be resurrected, like Lazarus. Imagine going to paradise, you're there for 2 or 3 days, and then you're called out and put back in your old body. I don't know about you, but I probably would be very unhappy with that. Say, I got out of here once, what am I doing here again? I mean, I was happy where I was at. I run my course, I'm there. Now you brought me back here to do what? See, who wants to be called back out of paradise? But we don't know where their souls go, if they're even completely aware of it. This is really the only book that tells us something of what is going on when you go to that in between. Because God is going to resurrect you. And Jonah knows he's not in a permanent place. And we'll talk about that in our next lesson. So Jonah is praying to God after death in expectation of God's mercy in his resurrection. Like Christ. Christ went and preached the news to those in hell. Oops. Too bad. Paid the price. But he's preaching to those in paradise also. Paid the price. You're all good. And he's resurrected. So modern man, that means us, are trapped in our worldview, just like ancient man was. And we reject, by and large, any belief of God at work in current events. Turn on the news, read anything about science, and all rejects the view of God at work in the world. Everything is explainable through rational, measurable, natural phenomena. Well, it's not. Wish it could be. Many people do, but it's not. All events, natural or man-caused, are the result of noble, measurable, or explainable causations from the perspective of modern man. Supernatural causations are rejected as ignorance. And so Christians are considered ignorant. Be the polite term. Stupid, the more common one. Because we believe that God is also at work behind the scenes. And not just God, but Lucifer and his forces also, within the boundaries prescribed by God, still making him sovereign. Thus, they do not search for God or his will. That's what rationalism is. Rejection of God. When you say, I am a rational person, you're saying, I am a person who does not believe God. When you say you're a Christian, in the minds of most people, you're admitting that you're ignorant. Because that's how they've been taught to think. So man seeks protection from government against events. Government becomes their God. That's why they do not turn to God, but they turn to government. Unfortunately, the Christian worldview is very similar. Raised in the modern world, Christians have the same worldview, and many of them don't realize it and seek to throw it off. Or they go to another extreme. So Christians also seek government intervention as protection. They'll be down there in D.C. screaming for money and tax breaks and everything else. And the government will say, sure, give up some of your freedoms. I'll trade. Of course, it doesn't really give you anything. It gives you loans. It doesn't give you money. It gives you loans. Well, what do you have to do with the loan? Pay it back. Which further enslaves you to the very government that you're seeking protection from. Christians do not seek to merge ancient and modern worldviews into a coherent view of God that views God at work in the world. Instead, they make the same mistake as the pagan ancient people did. They blindly attribute events to God. God sent Hurricane Irma to punish America because we're wicked. Do you know that for a fact? No. Then you cannot make that statement. And the fact that you make that statement shows that you're ignorant of the scriptures. Of course people are going to laugh at you because you are making that up. Just like the climate people who say it's because of climate change and man's intervention and adding to warm and all this that has caused more violent hurricanes. Well, they can't prove that. They're just as ignorant. They're making a statement of fact that they cannot prove as fact. because they have an agenda also. This is their religion. So as Christians, we need to not make statements that God did this, God is doing that, Satan is behind this. We just need to say it is the will of God, because whatever happens, we understand that to be the will of God. Rather than trying to determine why God did it, if the Bible doesn't really tell us, we can't say for certainty that that is why it happened. So who's at work in events? The Bible clearly states when God is at work and why. But that is such a small segment of human history. We think in the Bible, reading the Bible, they happened all the time. Prophets and fire and all that. No, they're very, very isolated events in the broad brush of human history. And isolated to just a small segment of the globe. It was not common. Remember, the role of the prophet was to give people understanding of God's will, to speak God's facts. But those instances were rare, and we are not given this specific insight because we have the Bible. We have the mind of God. And what is the mind of God? To be like Jonah. Well, not like Jonah, even though we act like Jonah a lot. We'll curse the Russians, we'll curse the Muslims, we'll curse everybody that we see is going to hurt America, but we'll take the gospel out to those we like. Well, that's not what God said. He said take it out everywhere, regardless. That's what His Word says. So we're not to govern our lives according to, we are to govern our lives according to His Word, but not by trying to determine spiritual facts that are not given to us. So we are to do the good that God reveals. Unless God directly tells us who is at work behind the scenes, you're guessing. Stop it. You sound ignorant. We don't know if God did this or that. Remember, Lucifer can do bad and good. And by good, I don't mean moral good, but that which we might perceive as good, giving us the go-ahead to continue living as we're living. Which is morally bad. If that's not what God has prescribed for us. So the result of God's work brings forth fruit of the Spirit. How do we know if God is at work? Fruit of the Spirit. Does it bring forth love, joy, peace, self-control, hope? All of those will become evident when God is directly at work. And He pulls those even out of hard times. But the result of Lucifer's work brings about works of the flesh. Murder, sorcery, immorality, adultery, gossiping, backbiting, so on and so forth. Go read the list. Then go look in the mirror. And then look in the mirror and read the list looking at yourself. Rather than worry about who is doing what, we need to do God's good as revealed in His Word, which means living the Word and speaking the Word. If you're living the Word, if you're truly saved, it will season everything, because that is the foundation from which all your thoughts will spring forth. And your actions. And your attitudes. So many people are going to these Christian magic bookstores and buying these books that say you follow these rules and you'll be living the Christ-like life. No. If you're saved, you have a new nature. It's going to spring from that. What you need to realize is to stop tamping that off by following the old flesh. That's where the war is at inside of us all the time. Because we have the two natures constantly at war. Romans 7, Romans 8. That is why James says we are two-souled, double-minded. We need to stop following the flesh and start following the Spirit. But we need to see it clearly, realizing that it may condemn many of those popular beliefs we thought to be true and are not. Both of current events and past events. We need to see not only ourselves, but our times through the eyes of God. We need to start first with the book of God so we truly understand what's there. If we don't, then we don't know what His will is because we're reading it with the wrong mindset. Thank you.